Hello, everybody. I'm Devin. I'm an alcoholic. You know, it's an honor and a privilege to get to stand and speak at an AA meeting. So I'd like to thank Michelle for asking me to speak. We met a couple months ago, and she just said, hey, I need people to speak at this meeting. Would you like to come? So, of course, I said yes, and here I am. My sobriety date is August 28th, 2011, so about a month and change ago, it was 4 years. I have a sponsor named Ron M., who has a sponsor. I currently have 3 sponsees. I've done the 12 steps in completion from 1 to 12 twice, and I try my best to actually live with 10 and 11 as like a daily practice. And for me, step 12 is kind of like an everyday living experience. You know, getting to stand up and share at any meeting, whether it's qualifying or just a 3-minute share, to me is 12-step work. And sitting down and getting coffee before or after a meeting to talk to someone else in the fellowship, to me is 12-step work. What I really try to do today is share my experience in the recovery process more than my experience drinking and using. I think that everybody sitting in this room isn't really here by a mistake. I haven't really met somebody who just happened into an AA meeting and stayed for the whole meeting if they found out where they were. But I do need to qualify a little bit and earn the seat. So, you know, the most important thing I can ever say is that I am an alcoholic. And what I want to talk about is what that word to me means. And I found really some great descriptions in the beginning of the big book for the doctor's opinion. And so when I say I'm an alcoholic, what I'm really referring to is at a certain point, I lost the ability to choose how much or how often I was going to take drugs and alcohol. I crossed a line where I had no more power in that decision. And the minute that I took any substance into my body, it was like I was on a hair trigger and a switch flipped. And now it was like 0 to 60. I'm in the fast lane. There's nothing that's going to stop this for the rest of that day until I pass out, blackout, whatever. And I see that today is that's actually like a phenomenon of craving. And it's the physical component to this thing called alcoholism, which is actually like the final piece of the puzzle. Before that, though, you know, I have this mind that really just keeps obsessing over finding some kind of peace. And so when I was really young, 11 or 12, and I actually had my first drink and I smoked my first joint, I got a peace of mind in that moment that I didn't know I needed. All of a sudden, I felt like I was me for the first time. I was able to talk to the other people that I was with. I was able to be comfortable in my own skin. But up until that moment, I didn't know I was uncomfortable. I was just walking through life, and I found something that all of a sudden quieted an inner dialogue that was just nonstop going on inside of me. And that's how I structured my entire life after that moment. All the people that I hung out with, the people that I associated with, were going to be people that also engaged in those activities. And it bonded us in a different way than, say, the people that I was in classes with or was you know, participating in like school activities with. And so that's where that mental obsession for me, I think, really came from, is that, you know, the drugs and the alcohol for me was my first solution to a spiritual condition that, I didn't know I had. So the spiritual condition for me is really the root of the problem. I don't know why I never felt like I fit in. I don't know why I never really seemed to feel okay with me in the world. I had people that I could connect with in multiple areas of my life, and I just never, I always seemed to want to push away from everybody. I was more okay isolating by myself than I was around a group of people. And I don't know what that is, but I hear it in almost every person that I've ever heard qualify has talked about this idea of feeling separate from the whole, apart from, not a part of. You know, something was going on from an early age. You know, when I was 8, I was put on like prescription amphetamines from a psychiatrist, and you know I was like medicated, so that maybe made me feel like I was different than other people. I don't know. All I know is that when I took a drink or I took a drug, I did have an abnormal reaction. But at the time, it was great. You know, this isn't like being processed as a 12-year-old child. These are all concepts that I've learned from sitting in this fellowship and having some great teachers put in my path to kind of illuminate, you know, what was going on. So, you know, to get through the, like, the war story part of it, you know, the externals, I was good at keeping, like, a lot of the externals looking great. you know, I could show up for school. I'm intelligent enough to be able to, like, get the grades or whatever, so the family's happy. You know, a lot of my early years, like, drugs were a lot easier to get in this country, at least, before I was 21. So there was a lot of drug use at an early age. There was a lot of powders. There was needles. You know, it got pretty serious pretty early on. When I got to college, it was just daily mayhem. And before I got to college, I was put in a 30-day inpatient facility. I got almost 90 days sober. I had a sponsor in AA because where I was from, outside of Chicago, NA was a joke. So you go to AA because that's where sobriety was. So I got a sponsor. I think I did some steps. The whole time it was just, you know, a charade. I wasn't there to actually grow. I was just, this is like the boxes that I have to check to get back to Devin's plan in my life. So then when I got done with that, it was a good 6 years just kind of banging my head against the wall. And, you know, by the end of it, I crossed that line, as I said, where I lost the power of choice. Some of the externals, you know, I've been to jail, I've overdosed, my teeth were shattered through a home invasion, I got punched in the face with brass knuckles, you know, I had friends commit suicide, I've had friends overdose, you know, none of that really, to me, registered as a bottom. What finally happened was, you know, in step one, they talk about, you know, this powerless, and everyone wants to talk about, you know, it's like the physical side of being powerless to a substance, I have to take more. For me, what was more and what is more important is the unmanageability part. And a lot of times I hear it talked about in the externals, but for me it was this internal unmanageability. You know, my emotions were up and down. I really couldn't maintain solid relationships or connect with anybody that wasn't, quote unquote, partying like I partied. You know, I never really had a girlfriend. All the friends that I had were just people that were just as sick as I was, or sicker, so I could feel like I wasn't the worst one around. And that was kind of the company that I kept. You know, so the misery and depression, the guilt and the shame about how I was living my life, you know, the constant lying to my family and hiding what I was doing so that people would, you know, think that I wasn't really what, you know, they would look at me and be like, oh, he's fine. But the internal unmanageability is what finally brought me back around to realizing that something was the problem. Something was wrong, and I didn't really know what to do. So in 2011, in the summer, somewhere around June probably, I started showing back up to AA. And, you know, I don't think I showed up here. I was brought here by something else. Because as far as I was concerned, I was just waking up every morning going, I can't believe I woke up. I don't want to wake up. I don't want to do this anymore, but I have to do this. And it was this like rat race in my head of, you know, I don't know how to not do this. And physically, I was at a point where I was dependent on a couple of different things. And so I knew that like I had to figure out getting some of that or else I'm not getting out of bed. And I'm definitely not going to be able to show up for anything that's going on in my life. And at this point in my life, I'd been in New York for about a year and the parents were still helping. So the only reason I don't have homelessness in my story is because my family was willing to help me in the move after college to come to New York. Were they to just say, you know, well, you're out of college, you're done, I would have been homeless on the street. So I'm, you know, I had a lot of luck in that department, I guess. You know, the only reason that that's not in my story is really because of the family. So when I finally did start showing up, my nickname was One Day Devin. I would come in, I would get a day, and I would go back out for a couple of days, and it was always on a drink. It was just one drink. I would go out to my job, and they would give me a ticket and say, this is a drink ticket, you know, and I would just say, well, it's just a beer, you know, or I'm just going to, you know, whatever. I'm just going to get one cocktail, whatever, like a well whiskey, whatever. And at the end of it, it was just that one drink, and then it was, you know, 3 days later, I would maybe stumble back into AA, physically hurting, and I didn't know what had happened, and I was back on one day. So all the people that I was seeing at the meetings that I was showing up to regularly, some of them started nicknaming me One Day Devin. So what happened, in the back of the book, they have the appendix for the spiritual experience, and if you know, you know, I love the history of this program. Bill had a white light experience in a hospital. And at that moment, his desire to drink and all this was lifted. He was a very depressed guy for most of his life, but the desire to drink was taken in that moment. And Dr. Bob, on the other hand, you know, struggled for years really battling back cravings and this desire to drink. I had a moment in a meeting where I took a burning desire and I shared that I didn't know what to do, except that if I left the meeting and I didn't have another meeting to go to, I knew I was going to be drunk or high before the end of the day. And when we grabbed hands to say the Serenity Prayer, I felt the chills down my spine. And that, to me, is a spiritual experience. I've only felt it through one other avenue of my life, which is a creative pursuit, which is the only reason why I ever followed that, was it was a tangible reaction to something that was happening in my life around me. So to be sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, to share any other day, just feeling miserable, and I shared, and then we grabbed hands, and I felt this thing down my spine. I see that as a spiritual experience. And in that moment, from then until now, I don't think I've really seriously entertained the idea of actually picking up a drink or a drug. And to me, that's not the normal experience, but that's my experience. So I want to share it because some people feel like, you know, that's just not true. And I think the overwhelming majority, as it says in the book, is this overtime educational variety experience. And at the time, I didn't go, oh, that's a spiritual experience. I don't want to drink. I just said, oh, this is something that I need to pay attention to. I'm where I need to be. I ended up at 4 meetings that day. And I ended up at 4 meetings for most of the first couple of weeks when I was trying to get sober. I detoxed in the rooms. And I found a sponsor early on when I was going to meetings, and I was still One Day Devin. I'd found a sponsor then who was willing to work with me, but I was doing the marijuana maintenance, or I'm just, you know, whatever my plan was. He's like, well, look, let's just keep talking, and when, you know, we're ready to actually try this complete sobriety thing, let's do some steps. And, you know, he worked with me. He wasn't really persistent. It was kind of nice. It was, I think, it was what I needed at the time. It was when I would reach out, I'd be hurting, and I'd say, okay, let's do some steps. I'm feeling sheepish. I'm sitting in a 12-step fellowship. I'm hearing people talk about steps, and I don't know anything about the steps. I mean, I can read them on the shade, but I don't really know what it is. And I'm hearing people talk about experiences that they're having, doing inventory, making amends, talking about character defects. And to me, this was still foreign concepts. So over time, I started expressing interest, and we did do the steps, and it was over the first about 2.5 years of my sobriety. And he brought me to a point. He brought me to a point of wanting to seek something further, because we got to that 12th step, and it was like, okay, time to get a sponsee. And I went, wow, I don't know if I could verbalize any of this that's going on. I don't think I have anything to give right now. You know, it was still all about me. I would go to the meetings, and I needed to share what was going on in my life and talk about the hard external circumstances of my life. And I didn't really feel like I had a solution. I was just riding on this surrender and this spiritual experience that had happened to me. So around 3 years, you know, I ran into a guy that I'd met when I was counting days, and we had been in contact over the course of those 3 years. And he was just that guy that always had something that I could walk away and be like, wow, that really... that I can remember that. I can take that to the bank. And we ran into each other in a coffee shop. I talked about how I wanted to maybe get another sponsor, work through the big book, maybe get a little deeper on this thing. And then he was at a meeting the next morning that I was at, and he suggested this guy, Ron M. And Ron really changed my life. We went through the steps and pretty quickly. And that was where I've really had a significant experience with the steps, and that's kind of what I want to talk about a little bit. So it was told to me that, you know, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in my mind, not my body. So if I describe to you that I have a drinking problem and I just need to stop drinking, that's a fairly simple problem. I just go to detox. They take the drugs and the alcohol away. Physically, I get better. I walk out. I should be cured, right? But that doesn't work for me. And that never worked for me. And I tried all the different ways. I tried just doing this, just doing that. Maybe I'll just drink on a couple of days a week. Maybe, you know, I tried everything on my own and it never worked. I always ended up with the same results. So when I started to grasp that for me today, I see step one is really that my mind is my problem. My mind wants to kill me. You know, my thinking is really what I need to change to understand what's going on with me. And how do I really do that? Is I got to get honest with myself and with somebody else. You know, I'm going to believe you guys. If you come up to me and talk to me, I'm going to believe what you say. But at the end of the day, if you're lying, you're going to go home and you're going to know that you're lying to yourself. And I think that was the honesty that I needed to realize, was I need to be honest with myself first. because I know if I'm being dishonest. At the end of the day, it's just me. I'm laying down in my bed. I know if I was dishonest that day. That's what's going to weigh on me and take me out more than, you know, being honest with other people. And so I realized that today, you know, my mind is what the problem is. And really, the deeper level of that is that I identify with my own thoughts. And a lot of my own thoughts, this, like, idea of ego and self is really, it's just I'm taking ownership of these thoughts, of these despicable things that happened in my life and these patterns of behavior. I say, that's me. You know, I am the sleazebag, cheater, liar, stealer, you know. But it's like, that's not me. That's just this false sense of self that now I've gone with for so many years. And that's a product of my mind and my thinking, and that's really where my problem is. So then we talked about this idea of coming to believe in a power that was bigger than me. And there was a lot of lines in the book that Ron pointed me at that were really just saying that, you know, there's a solution in my heart. And if my mind is my problem, then my heart has some source of solution. And I need to learn to listen to my heart and not my mind and get out of the way of my thinking. And, you know, the love that I need to have to survive really comes from my heart. So I need to live in this place of being in my heart and realizing that I don't have the answer. And so I needed to be open-minded that when I go to a meeting and I hear people share that have decades of sobriety, that they're not lying to me. In the beginning, I thought everybody had an agenda. Everybody was cutting a corner. No one really got 30 years sober. There had to be one drink somewhere. And when I started realizing that people had found something that did work for them, and I started seeing people navigating situations in their life sober, situations that I could never imagine dealing with, you know, foreclosure of a house, death of a parent, death of a child, you know, and I would see people come to a meeting and they would still have some peace and serenity and they would be navigating this horrific experience. And they'd be doing it sober, I started to believe that, well, they found something that works for them, so maybe that thing can work for me too. And then there's really like the buy-in of what, you know, am I making a decision to sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, or am I making a decision to do steps 4 through 9? And that was kind of what was pointed out to me that the third step is really all about, is a decision to actually turn my life and my actions over to this power. And really what that looks like is I need to do an inventory and I need to share it with someone that I trust and I need to get to the causes and conditions of why I have a sick mind and I have a broken spirit. So very quickly, when we discussed these ideas behind steps 1, 2, and 3 and I was able to have a conversation with my sponsor about what was going on and we looked at that third step prayer and he pointed out that everything I'm asking for in the third step prayer is so I can become helpful to somebody else. You know, take away my difficulties so that victory over them may bear witness to those that I would help. You know, it wasn't about me getting better. It was about me being able to turn around and maybe reach my hand out to someone else as he was doing to me in that moment. And then he identified that the inventory process is actually a beautiful process. You know, yeah, it's tough. I need to have, you know, a higher power with me because I don't want to look at myself necessarily. But at the same time, it's going to show me what I need to see. It's going to show me these character defects in myself that are blocking me off from my heart, that are keeping me identified with this mind that's trying to kill me. And so when I did an inventory and we read it and we went over all these character defects, I was actually armed with a sheet to realize that I'm super judgmental and I want something from everybody in the room. And I've got this lust thing that's out of control sometimes. And I'm full of fear and I'm angry and I'm hateful. And I'm really inconsiderate and critical of others, and I'm really just lazy. And I look at that list and I go, man, is that somebody I want to hang out with? No, that's not a fun list of things to see in a person. But to see it in myself was important. And at that moment, I realized, like, okay, I need to have a plan of action on a daily basis so that I don't react this way anymore. And so I guess I'm kind of running out of time, so I want to speed up a little bit. You know, 6 and 7 to me, it's kind of like a comedy bit. You know, I've never met anyone that has all of their character defects removed. I certainly don't, but I can try on a daily basis to, like, lessen that, right? I can try to strip it away. The amends process for me, you know, I'd made amends the first time around. This second time through the amends, it was really just a reapproach with the family and really let them know that this is what I'm doing in my life, this is what I'm doing in my sobriety. You let me know how I can be the son that you know deserve. and it was really sitting down and just having another conversation with them and letting them know that I was taking these certain actions to live differently. And, you know, there was other certain people that were close friends that, you know, I just had to sit down and talk to them. Like, hey, I was wrong for X, Y, and Z. And, you know, if I can ever be of service to you in any way or help you out to fix this, you let me know. And did I miss anything? You know, is there anything that you need to tell me? And, you know, 10, 11, and 12 is where I really try to sit. I need inventory, prayer, and meditation on a daily basis if I'm going to have a shot at getting the kind of peace and joy that I really want. I thought I found it in a bottle. I thought I found it in a bag. I thought I found it in a needle. 4 years of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm actually feel peaceful most of the time. And it's not contingent upon the job or the relationship or the money or the lack of, it's something that's free of charge. It's really just, am I willing to take the actions to continue to try to navigate life differently? And I think that for me, that is where my experience of my positive experience with recovery has lied. It was in now seeking to try to be the person that I really want to be. And that was totally not on the table 4 years ago. I came in, I was shaking, I was underweight. You know, no one wanted me to be around. I was a liability because I was passing out all the time. I was puking over here. You know, and today I get to sit here with you guys. And right now, everything is okay. And if you're new and, you know, this kind of seems crazy, I just want to let you know that no matter what, you don't have to take a drink or a drug ever again. It is possible. And there's a lot of people in this room, I can tell, that have a lot of time dealing with this, you know, idea, and I'm pretty sure everybody wants to help you out. So again, my name is Devin. I'm an alcoholic. Super glad that I get to be here today, and thanks for my sobriety.